It's Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden age. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levionier. Variety coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear Dinah Shore host The Ford Show. But right now, it's the Orson Welles Radio Almanac. From May 31st, 1944 on CBS, with John Brown, Martha Tilton, Hans Conried, and Charlie Cantor.
Welcome, one and all, to the sign of the Flying Red Horse. The makers of Mobil Gas and Mobil Oil bring you Orson Welles.
Good evening, everybody. This is Orson Welles. Welcome to the Mercury Wonder Show. Tonight, we've pitched our tents at the 6th Ferrying Group, Ferrying Division of the Air Transport Command at Long Beach, California. This is the home of the 6th Ferrying Group, and my observations lead me to believe that they've really got some devil-may-care pilots at this base. When they come in for a landing out here, the only way they can get them to pay any attention to the windsock is to put Betty Grable's leg in it. They took me for a ride in a bomber this afternoon for an added thrill. I came down by parachute. It wasn't exactly a planned jump. Some mad wag had painted gentlemen on the Bombay doors. Now, on with the show. Presenting at this time, tonight's special attraction, a glamorous star... glamorous star who's been chosen by the ferry pilots as the girl they'd most like to be grounded with, Marjorie Reynolds.
Thank you. Hello, Orson.
Hello, Marjorie. Oh, yes. Hello, Marjorie. You know, Marjorie, I've seen you in most of your pictures, Holiday Inn, Dixie, up in Mabel's room, and I've always had the feeling that I've seen you before.
You probably have, Orson. Before I went into pictures, I used to be a model. My face was on streetcar ads and magazines and billboards everywhere.
Hmm. Oh, now I remember. Yes. I've painted many a mustache on you. I hate myself now for it, of course. Let's get back to script. You know, Orson, I've met quite a few of the boys here. One of the pilots asked me to go out with him. Oh, that's your line. At least I hope it is. Go ahead.
You know, Orson, one of the pilots asked me to go out with him later and watch night maneuvers.
I beg your pardon?
Well, he wanted me to watch night maneuvers. I didn't know they had night maneuvers.
Oh, yes, yes. Some of their best training comes after dark. But these ferry pilots really do a wonderful job, Marjorie. I know they've flown our wonder show to quite a few out-of-the-way camps to entertain. One flight, I'll never forget that flight. We had W.C. Fields with us. What a trip that was. We flew blind all the way. It's the first time I've ever seen a pilot make a 3.2 landing. You'll have a chance, though, Marjorie, to meet a lot of the boys later. We've all been invited to the service club for a little snack after the broadcast.
Well, I'll be there, Orson, but I won't have anything to eat. I've got to watch my figure.
Oh, forget your figure. There's no sense in all of us watching it. Music, Lud. You know, a lot of mothers have been writing in asking what their boys in the camps are doing when their leaves are too short to come home. After making a survey, we're happy to turn in the following report. It's titled, What a Typical GI Soldier Does on Leave, or It Shouldn't Happen to an MP. The scene, a luxurious one-room suite in a Hollywood hotel. As we look in on our soldier, he is pressing his fatigue.
I like New York in June. How about you?
Come in. Just a minute. I'm coming. I'll open the door.
Oh, hello. I live down the hall, and I was wondering...
Oh, I'm afraid you've got the wrong room. Oh, fudge. Just when my iron was getting good and hot. Door opens.
I'd like to explain. The hotel manager told me you're on a 3-day pass and that you might be lonesome.
Oh, I'm never lonesome as long as I've got my Army field manual with me.
I'm up to the chapter on military courtesy, all about who to salute and who to... It's very fascinating. Awfully interesting chapter.
I thought maybe you'd like a date tonight. I've got tickets to a show, and then maybe we could go for a moonlight drive in my car.
Gee, no, I'm afraid not. You see, I had plans for tonight.
Another day?
No, I got some new stamps today. I just can't wait to put them in my album.
Maybe you'd like me to come in and chat with you for a while.
Well, I guess that'd be all right. Have to keep that door open. It's a rule of the hotel. Very good rule, too.
What do you mean?
Well, you see, when a soldier comes in for a furlough, he wants rest and quiet. And if you close the door, there's a fellow employed by the hotel who knocks on the door and says, "Are there any girls in there?" It's very disturbing.
I don't get it.
Well, I don't fully understand it myself. I think he's recruiting for the wax.
Of course, if you like, we could spend the evening here.
What could we do? I haven't even got a deck of cards.
Say,
typical, isn't it?
Say, are you bucking for a good conduct ribbon?
What? Are there any girls in here?
I beg your pardon?
Are there any girls in here?
Please, the door is open, and would you kindly stop knocking on my forehead?
Oh, sorry.
You know, soldier. Oh, soldier, you're awfully cute. Come on over here.
I'm comfortable where I am.
Oh, now let's get organized. Are we just going to sit around like this all evening?
Oh, I have been a fool. I haven't had a girl around for 6 months. Now you're here, and you're so lovely, and... Well, there's something you can do for me.
Anything. What is it?
Will you finish pressing my fatigues? And now, on with the Mercury Wonder Show.
Yes, sir, the Mercury Wonder Show for servicemen. Hurry, hurry, hurry. On the next platform, see Orson the Magnificent. He performs the most baffling illusions of the century. The show's going on, soldier. Don't miss it. Come on in.
Oh, I don't want to.
Why not, soldier? Don't you want to see Orson saw a woman in half?
Mister, I ain't been out with a girl in 6 months. Why should I go in there and watch him waste one?
Gentlemen, as you see, the lovely lady is in one piece. How do you feel, Martha?
Fine, Orson, but for a minute there, I thought I'd have to sing a duet.
One Martha Tilton is good enough for me. How about you, fellas?
Hear the music whisper, echoes of romance. Cuddle on my shoulder, hold me while we dance. It's a moment tender, now the spell is cast. Maybe you'd surrender, but you move too fast. Take it easy, take it easy. Don't you know it's more romantic when a dance is slow? Take it easy, take it easy. What's the good of feeling high when all the lights are low? Take it easy, take it easy. We've got lots of time ahead of us. The night is young. Take it easy, take it easy. Don't you know this music should be swayed instead of swung? Take your time, dance it with ease. Take your time, slow if you please. Take it easy, honey. Take your time right now. Take it easy, honey. Take your time right now. Oh, get another mama who will show you how. Take it easy, take it easy. Don't you know you're not supposed to make a rumble jump? Take it easy, take it easy. If you don't, I feel that our romance will hit a bump. Take it easy, take it easy. Don't you know it's time for romance when the music's sweet? Take it easy, take it easy. You should really try to make your heart control your feet. Take your time, baby, jump as easy. Take your time, boy, as slow as you please. Take it easy.
One of my favorite radio programs is Suspense, and the story they've been doing for the last couple of weeks is really a killer. Seems one Dr. Corey, a famous brain surgeon, has discovered a method of keeping the human brain alive after death. In the course of his fiendish experiments, Corey acquires the brain of William H. Donovan, a Wall Street tycoon. This brain very shortly gains control over Dr. Corey's brain, and when this happens, Corey thinks and talks like Donovan. Sort of a Jekyll and Hyde situation. By way of restaking our claim in the scream and shudder department, the Mercury offers now its own black market version of that rip-snorting spine chiller, Donovan's Brain.
This is the man in black, with the performance of Marjorie Reynolds as Janice and Orson Welles as Dr. Ronald Corey. We again hope to keep you in suspense.
As I sit outside my laboratory door, writing under the heading Experiment 87, this final entry in my casebook, you know, I'm a sort of a fat Ronald Coleman. I realize now that these are the last words I shall ever write upon this earth. July 13th. Today I sat in a radio studio and listened to Niles K. Donovan, the well-known radio announcer.
Tantalizing, tasty, toasted, and guaranteed rust-proof. And now, friends, for the details of our new $8 million prize contest. Sure, 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 sure.
At that very moment, a contest fiend, driven frantic by Donovan's persuasiveness, rushed to the stage, tore off the top of Donovan's head, and mailed it to the sponsor. An old joke, but an extraordinary piece of luck for me. By sending in 7 soap labels, together with 35 cents to cover the cost of wrapping and mailing, I gained possession of Donovan's brain, the living, pulsing brain of the greatest radio announcer ever to read a commercial. That night in my laboratory, I was joined by my associate and colleague, another mad scientist, old Dr. Frugelheiser. I say, Frugelheiser, what have we got here?
You know what we got here, Gory. It's the brain.
The brain of Donovan, the radio announcer?
Just as we planned, Doctor. The brain is alive here in this jar. We are keeping it alive.
Tell me more. I don't know what you're saying, but it sounds good.
But it's so simple. You see, the brain, when functioning, gives off infinitesimal electrical impulses.
Oh, yes.
I've hooked the encephalogroove groove up to a small amplifying system. The brain impulses can actually be heard. Here, I turn it on.
First time I ever saw a brain with a bald head. I think we should explain that Donovan's brain is being played by Charlie Cantor in a jar of alcohol. Too much alcohol. The brain, ladies and gentlemen, is boiled.
You know, of course, Corey, that those oscillations of the brain are known as delta waves.
Delta waves?
They maintain a steady rhythm.
Any resemblance to the delta rhythm, boys, is purely coincidental.
But, Doctor...
I didn't think that was funny when we wrote it, but...
But, Doctor, what bleeds from these experiments is the purpose.
Well, don't you see, Frugelheiser, that brain can think.
Ask it a question. Anything at all.
All right, I ask a question. Look, brain. Too much is due
or
too
much.
All right.
An accent, yes, but who much, no.
How?
Once again,
how? How? I'm a German
now
Indian.
Now he's an Indian.
How much is due and due?
No, not that way. This way. Donovan.
Oh, I think.
Brain, old boy. How much is two and two? Two and two.
Whoop.
$87 and a set of encyclopedias to Dr. Frugelmeister. This is exasperating. Come, brain, try it again. Two and two. Oh, shucks, tilt.
Ronald.
Oh, there you are, Janice, my darling wife, Janice, my lovely, my gorgeous, my beautiful. Amazing.
It's amusing, but confusing.
Oh, dear, it's awfully warm in here. I think I'll take my coat off.
Oh.
Put your coat back on, dear. The brain is blowing its top. And now I've got work to do. Out. Everyone out. Please leave me.
Wait, Ronald, darling. Don't you see what this is doing to you?
What do you mean?
Well, talking to that radio announcer's brain all the time. His brain talking to you. It's changed you somehow.
Nonsense. I haven't changed.
Oh, you have, Ronald. Well, you used to love to sit home with me and listen to the radio all evening.
Yes, but I don't like it anymore. What good is radio? Sometimes you have to listen to 15 or 20 minutes of entertainment before you get even a teensy-weensy commercial. And that's the best part of radio.
Oh, commercial. Sure. That's what I like. Sure.
July 18th. Last night, as I entered the house...
Darling, where have you been?
Why, I just went down to the corner to get some razor blades.
Oh, well, dinner will be ready in a few minutes, dear.
Fine. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, I'll just run upstairs and shave with those hollow ground genuine green blades which glide over your whiskers and make you face happy. And if I don't get 100% shaving satisfaction, I get double my money back in a floor lamp. Sure. Sure.
Stop it, please.
Sure. What's the trouble, dear?
Oh, I can't stand it any longer. The same thing day after day. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Thursday?
Whenever you're thirsty, try a bottle of delicious Pepsi Cola. Sure.
Oh, Ronald, the brain is growing stronger than you.
Darling, how can you talk like that?
Oh, Ronald, if only we could be as we used to be. I love you, Ronald. You're more attractive than ever. Take me in your arms.
My sweet... Now, this isn't supposed to be funny. This is a highly emotional scene. Say, take me in your arms again, please. We get back in the
mood. Oh, you're so attractive. Take me in your arms.
My sweet. You never should have said I was attractive. That's what tipped the whole thing. My sweet. Nothing will ever come between us. Kiss me! Kiss me! Donovan, get back in that jar.
Oh, that's the last straw. Ronald, you must make your choice now. Choose between that brain, that radio announcer's brain, and me. When you've decided, contact me.
I must have time to think. Janice wants me to destroy the brain. Should I?
Don't be a chump. Why destroy the brain? Destroy Janice.
Destroy Janice?
Sure. It's easy. Put her to sleep first.
How could I do that?
Simple, very simple. Run down to your neighborhood druggist and get a box of Tsetse sleeping pills. They come in four delicious flavors. Catnap, knockout, no twitch, and pooped.
Don't you see there's no time?
Well, there are other ways to put her to sleep. Send her to see Jane Eyre.
No, that's too severe. Murder's bad enough, but torture, no.
Listen to me. Go into that room. Sneak up behind her.
I can't.
Don't interrupt.
I will.
You won't.
I can't.
You must.
I shan't.
You shall.
No, no.
Sure, sure.
Hip, hip.
Hooray!
Stop, stop. Stop, stop that dancing up there. I won't hear anymore. Yes, I will too. Sorry, Brain, I take it back. Brain, Brain, please talk to me. Brain, I didn't mean it. Corey DeBrain, Corey DeBrain, come in, Brain. Over. What's that, Brain? You have what?
A plan.
A plan? What is the plan, Brain? Finished? You want a half-hour radio show with only 3 minutes of entertainment, all the rest commercial? Brain, you must be mad. I'm going to destroy you. It's no use, Brain. This is the finish.
Oh, wait. Darling, darling, what happened? You've destroyed the Brain.
Yes, Janice, and now I'm freed. You hear me? Freed. I'll never again be controlled by that monster, Donovan.
Oh, my sweet. This makes me so happy.
It does?
Yes, it does.
Does everything. It makes your dishes sparkle, your kitchen work easier. Sure, sure, sure. Sure.
Now, our Mercury All-Star Jazz Combination offers for your delectation and kicks a special reading of Tiger Rag. John Gillespie McGee, Jr. was an RCA Air flyer who was killed in action 3 years ago at the age of 19. He wrote this poem, which is now in the Library of Congress, which I'd like to read to you.
Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds and done 100 things you have not dreamed of. Wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence. Hovering there, I've chased the shouting wind along and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. Up, up the long, delirious, burning blue, I've topped the windswept heights with easy grace where never lark or even eagle flew. And while with silent, lifting mind, I've trod the high, untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touched the face of God. Time to say goodnight now. We want to thank the men and officers, and particularly Brigadier General William H. Tunner, Commanding General of the Fairing Division, Colonel Andrew B. Cannon, Commanding Officer, 6th Fairing Group, Major Terry Hunt, and Captain William Novak, Special Service Officers of the 6th Fairing Group, Fairing Division, Air Transport Command at Long Beach, California. I'd also like to thank Bill Spear, Director of Suspense, and Kurt Siodmak, who wrote Donovan's Brain, for letting us lampoon what was a very wonderful radio drama. I'd also like to apologize to Orson Welles, who appeared in the original production of Donovan's Brain and gave a grand performance. Grand, grand. I'd like to go on about that, but my time's up. So please join us again next week. Till then, my sponsors, the makers of Mobil Gas and Mobil Oil, all of us in the Mercury Theater remain, as always, obediently yours.
The makers of Mobil Gas and Mobil Oil invite you to listen in next week. Same time, same station, to Orson Welles. Mr. Welles' guest is Lynn Barry. Marjorie Reynolds appears with the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, producers of The Story of Dr. Watson. John McIntyre speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Radio Almanac, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 31st, 1944, on CBS, Orson Welles was star. Within that performance, we heard a version of Donovan's Brain, which Orson had performed on the CBS program Suspense only the week before. It's an hour of variety on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and now time for The Ford Show, with Dinah Shore as host, one of her many incarnations on air, with William Bendix as special guest, from November 6th, 1946, on CBS.
This is The Ford Show, starring Dinah Shore with Peter Lind Hayes and Robert Emmendolin and his orchestra, and our guest for tonight, William Bendix, all presented by the Ford Dealers and Lincoln Mercury Dealers of America. And here is Dinah Shore.
I know why I've waited, know why I've been blue. Wait each night for someone exactly like you. Why should we spend money on a show or two? No one does those love things exactly like you. You make me feel so grand. I wanna hand the world to you. You seem to understand each foolish little dream I'm dreaming, scheming, scheming. Now I know why Mother taught me to be true. She meant me for someone exactly like you. to be true. She meant me for someone exactly like you. Exactly like you.
Friends, this is Dinah Shore. I'm awfully glad you're spending another Wednesday with us. Bobby Dolan is here, and so is his fine orchestra. Our guest is that mighty William Bendix, the screen star, who's also the famous Riley from The Life Of. And in addition tonight, Peter Hayes is going to do his characterization of Punchy Callahan, the punch-drunk prize fighter. So without further ado, we bring you the man who can do it, Peter Lynn Hayes.
Say, Dinah.
Uh-huh.
Dinah, do you think a character like Punchy Callahan will make sense to the ladies?
And why not? Gals know as much about prize fighting as you men. We go to fights, and for your information, there are some very good lady boxers.
Oh, but you notice they don't box with men.
Probably because the men are scared.
No, not really. It's because the clinches would last too long. No fooling, Dinah. I don't think boxing talk is for the weaker sex.
I resent that weaker sex.
No offense, Dinah, but men are physically stronger.
We do plenty of heavy stuff. Now, what about washing clothes, beating rugs, cleaning house, moving furniture? You know, doesn't do everything.
No.
And if you think gals are ignorant about boxing, just ask me a few questions about it. Ask me anything.
Okay.
Anything.
Okay, what is an uppercut?
Uppercut. An uppercut is a blow upward from the waist or hip delivered under or inside the opponent's guard.
Hey, where'd you learn that?
College.
In college? What subject?
Domestic science.
Oh. Okay, Dinah, Uncle, I give up. Here goes Punchy Callahan. Folks, Punchy Callahan is an impression based on a real character I used to know in New York. One day when I was in the Army, a group of us were strolling through the Central Park when a whimsical character in an old cap came shuffling up to us. He talked something like this. Music, Dinah.
I say, boys. Hey, it's a lovely day out here in the park, ain't it? Who am I? I'm Punchy Callahan, sonny. I'm one of the greatest light heavyweights who was ever carried out of the ring. Never heard the name, eh? Want to hear about my first fight? You guys got an hour? I was hanging around Stillman's gym, you see, and Scrappy, that's my manager, Scrappy says to me, he says, Callahan, what you need for your first opponent is a guy with a lot of experience so that you, in turn, can absorb his experience, see? That's right. So he booked me on an $11 club date at the YMCA with a monster. Oh, a guy named Murderin' Murk. What a first round. He bust my nose, then he belted me on the top of the head and broke my shoelaces. You see? And my manager, Scrappy, kept hollering. He says, avoid him. Avoid him. So I says, avoid him? What do you want me to do, leave town? This guy was really punch. I hadn't laid a glove on him since we shook hands. Now, all of a sudden, you see, in the second round, I had Murderin' Murk worried. He was afraid he was going to kill me, see? Then a fortunate thing happened. I stumbled into a clinch, and all of a sudden, I recognized a familiar face in the third row. Yeah, it was me, see? Well, I reluctantly crawled back in the ring. We're going round and round when all of a sudden I get a brilliant idea. Now is the time for strategy. He who fights and runs away, etc. So I get around. See, I get near my corner. I give Scrappy, my manager, the old winkers. I give him the offer. He says, hey, Scrappy, throw the towel in. Scrappy looks up and says, no. Scrappy was still game, see? Round and round we go. Boom, boom. All of a sudden, I get near my corner again. I said, Scrappy, throw the towel in and throw it in now. I don't think I'll be coming around this way. Oh, that Scrappy was murder. He wasn't afraid for me to fight anybody. So anyway, what's that, officer? No, I ain't annoying these soldiers. Look, why do you policemen... You want to see my draft card? For which war? Look, officer, I'm a father. Huh? I say I'm a father. Before Pearl Harbor. Before Pearl White. Officer, I'm no bum. I'm a respectable citizen. I have an investment in this community. My checks are good. Everybody's got them. Least you could do is have a little respect for your elders. I'm Punchy Callahan. I'm a darn fine American, and don't you forget it. That badge don't frighten me, officer. I'll ram it down your throat. I got friends downtown. I'll have you shipped to Brooklyn. I still go a few rounds every morning if you'd like to try me out. Come on, put up your dukes, you bum. Come on, I scared you with your billy club and your blue suit and your badge. So long, boys. This bum's running me out of the park.
By the billion, so they've got to find those extra cups to fill. They've got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. You can't get cherry soda, cause they've got to sell their quota. And the way things are, I guess they never will. They've got a zillion tons of coffee in Brazil. No tea or tomato juice, you'll see no potato juice, cause the planters down in Santos all say no, no, no. A politician's daughter was accused of drinking water and was fined a great big $50 bill. They've got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. No, no, no. So you'll add to the local color, serving coffee with the cruller. Dunkin' doesn't take a lot of skill. They've got an awful lot of coffee.
An awful lot of coffee.
An awful lot of coffee in Brazil.
That's an awfully cute song, that coffee song, Dinah.
Isn't it clever? It sounds a lot like Rogers and Hart.
To me, it sounds more like Chase and Sanborn.
Mr. Bendix, I presume?
Yes. Thank you.
Bill, it's good to see you. Okay. And you're looking very well, considering, you know, the blow you suffered last month.
Oh, yeah, that was tough, Dinah. It's pretty hard to take.
I tried to reach you to tell you how sorry I was.
Oh, that's all right, Dinah. It was sweet of you to send those flowers. Sure was tough.
I'll bet it was.
Yeah. Well, maybe Brooklyn will do it next year.
Sure. Miracles can happen, Bill.
Bill, are you still thinking about that pennant race? This is November.
Yes, you're right, Pete. After all, what is it? Baseball? A game? It was a good season. Well played. Brooklyn did its best. It fought gamely and deserves credit for its splendid endeavor. Them crummy bums. Let's change the subject. It depresses me.
Okay. Say, Bill, you know Pete's going to make a picture?
No.
Yeah. Bill, any small tips will be welcomed.
Well, Pete, the first thing is to study acting. It'll pay off.
Oh, I've been doing that, Bill.
Good. Study all there is to know, especially diction. Boy, I'll always be glad that I learned myself how to speak diction.
Say, Bill, do you think Pete will make a good leading man?
A leading man? Pete, why do you want to be a leading man?
Well, it seemed like a good place to start.
Pete, look at me. In my new Paramount picture, 2 years before the mast,
I'm playing a character actor, not a handsome leading man. And I had my choice. But, Peter, I don't play leading men, and do you know why?
Let's go back to baseball.
Go ahead, Bill. Tell us why.
Because we character actors last longer. Long after the Allen Ladds and the Tyrone Powers and the Gregory Pecks have lost their looks, we will still be repulsive.
Now, that makes sense, I think.
Well, sure. When you play a character, it's interesting. You really have to study a guy, know him.
Well, that's true. Now, for instance, take Punchy Callahan. It would be very interesting to examine what sort of guy he is. I mean, how Callahan got to be Punchy Callahan.
Dinah, it's worth looking into.
Right. Hey, I'll be Punchy's Brooklyn girlfriend right from Brooklyn, hey.
Sounds more like South Brooklyn, hey. Hey, hey.
Never mind. Bobby, an arresting note, please. Folks, a little while ago, you heard Peter give his impression of poor old punch-drunk Punchy Callahan. Now, Pete, Bill Bendix, Bobby Dolan, and I show you dramatically how Punchy got that way. We present the fighting career of Punchy Callahan, or The Big Sleep. Personally, my name is Mrs. Punchy Callahan. I've been married to Punchy for a long time. Almost 20 rounds. I remember before we was married when I was just plain Dinah Dolan and he was a young fighter named Peter Lynn Callahan. I always tried to get him to stop fighting. Now, you listen to me, Peter Lynn Callahan. I am telling you for the third, final, last, and not least time, you got to give up prize fighting.
But, Dinah, I'm fighting Crusher O'Rourke tomorrow night.
Irregardless, you got to quit. Look at you. Your ears are swollen, your nose is busted, your eyes is black, your front teeth is all missing. Petey, you got to quit fighting before it ruins your appearance.
But, Dinah, I can't quit now. I can become champ if I can just get over my one weak point.
Your one weak point. And pray tell, what is that?
Well, it's just that when I get hit, I fall down. But you see, Dinah, my new manager...
Now, Peter Callahan, I will certainly not permit any man to which I am going to become the wife of to engage in an occupation which is foolhardy, especially when the fool isn't very hardy. Now, you got to quit that.
Dinah, me darling daughter, where is it you're after being?
Oh, here I am. Here I am, Papa dear, with Peter.
Oh, so it's him again. The maroon. Daughter, I can't understand you at all. Now, look, you canvas back.
Ah, but Mr. Dolan,
I told you no daughter of mine would marry a fighter. Now be off with you, or I swear I'll lather your skull. If I don't, I hope I may never see Barry Fitzgerald again.
But come, Mr. Dolan, I'm going to be champ. Someday I'm going to fight Joe Lewis.
Oh, so it's Joe Lewis you're going to fight. Well, when you fight him, I suggest you dress him up in a cutaway coat, striped trousers, and a stiff white shirt.
Now, just a moment. Why should I dress up like that for a fight?
Because then, when it's over, all they'll have to do is fold your arms. Now, I want you gone in 2 minutes. My daughter's going to marry an idiot. It'll be someone like her father.
Now, you see, Peter, you got to give up the ring.
So here you are, Callahan. Where have you been? I've been looking all over for you.
Oh, hello, Scrappy. Dinah, this is my new manager, Scrappy Bendix.
Charmed, I doubt.
Callahan, I thought I told you that women are poison for fighters. Now, look, I put you on a diet. No starches, no fats, no coffee, right?
Right.
Well, to that, add no tomatoes. Now, listen, Callahan, I want to talk to you about our strategy for tomorrow's fight. Crusher O'Rourke is going to be a tough opponent, so you got to move fast.
Okay, what do I do?
Well, as soon as the bell rings, I want you to come out and hit him with a fast right. Then cross your left to his chin and hook to his body with your right.
Won't that get him sore?
Egad, you try one's patience. Now, listen to me. I got an idea. We're going to use psychology.
Huh?
The Crusher is very superstitious, so we work on his superstition.
Now, how will we do that?
We put a horseshoe in each glove.
Oh, Peter, I beg you on Bendix's knee.
No.
Please, give up this madness before it's too late. Believe me, it's better to be a live person than a dead corpse.
Don't listen to her, kid. You fight tomorrow night. Pete, stick with me and you'll wear diamonds.
Yeah. He'll have rings on his fingers and bells in his head.
Well, folks, the big bout is about to start between Cresher O'Rourke and Peter Lynn Callahan. And there's the bell. Both fighters advance to the center of the ring cautiously. Cresher lets go with a terrific right. It misses, and Callahan's down. One, two,
three. Pete, talk to me. The fight's over. Pete.
What's the matter with him?
Oh, it's all right. This happens to a lot of fighters. It's called ringer mortis.
Pete, speak to me. I'll marry you. I'll be Mrs. Peter Callahan. I'll be proud to be Mrs. Peter Callahan.
Look, he's opening his eyes. He's talking.
Oh, where am I? Did anybody get the license number on that truck?
You better make that Mrs. Punchy Callahan. I'd like to dedicate this next number to Punchy Callahan. Dear Punchy, your ears are cauliflower and your head is battered, but I love you for sentimental reasons. I love you. Now on a brief visit to New York, where the well-known editor and commentator is waiting to talk to us. Okay, New York, and Henry LaCassette.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? The other day I went for a ride in an automobile out in Dearborn, Michigan. Al Esper was driving. Al is a stocky, blue-eyed man of 46 and the best driver I ever saw. We went tearing around an oval test track at nearly 100 miles an hour in a Lincoln. Drove over concrete humps, slewed around in sand and mud and water, and several times, going at 60 miles an hour, Al braked the Lincoln to a sudden stop. I was plenty scared, but not Al. You see, Al is one of the Ford Motor Company test engineers. With his 35 test drivers, he puts representative Lincolns, Mercurys, and Fords through thousands of miles of such driving. These cars are also driven through towns, cities, up and down hills, over all sorts of roads through all kinds of driving conditions. Mostly young men, Al's drivers must pass a strenuous examination, very like a plane pilot's, as far as vision, reflexes, and mechanical aptitude are concerned, to get their jobs. Each of them is an expert, responsible for the car he tests. These expert drivers report completely and in detail on the performance and durability of cars and trucks, and this information is passed on to the engineering and manufacturing divisions. Al Esper and his test track crew consider that they have just one major job: to make sure that tomorrow you will have an even stronger, safer, and more efficient car or truck than you had yesterday. And now, back to the Ford Show and Dinah Shore in Hollywood.
Thank you, Mr. LaCassette. We'll be back next Wednesday evening. Bill, for your performance of Scrappy tonight, you ought to be awarded a Cauliflower Oscar.
Oh, thank you, Dinah. It was a great honor. Oh, nice seeing you, Pete.
Same here, Bill. Say, Bill, about my chances of getting into pictures, I think...
Hey, Scrappy, throw the towel in.
Good night, folks.
This is again next Wednesday night when the Ford Dealers and Lincoln Mercury Dealers of America again bring you Dinah Shore with Peter Lynn Hayes and Robert Emmett Dolan and his orchestra. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Ford Show on Tuned to Yesterday from November 6th, 1946 on CBS. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of variety on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.